Good morning and welcome to Jonesy, the show that brings you conversations with some of the most interesting people in the world of books, podcasts, radio, theater, music, food, and humor, guaranteed to entertain and enlighten. I'm the host of Jonesy, Ken Jones. No relation, by the way. I had the great pleasure of interviewing Eugene-based writer Kai Emmons 5 times for KABU before she ended her life through Oregon's Death with Dignity program in January 2023. Kai was diagnosed with bulbar onset ALS in early 2021 at the age of 70. It's a debilitating disease which takes away the power of speech before affecting the rest of the body, and for now at least, there's no cure. Always a strong and independent woman, Kai made the decision to end her life on her own terms. On the morning of her death, she sent the just-completed manuscript of her 6th novel and 7th book of fiction to her agent. That book, titled The Bells, was recently published by Red Hen Press, thanks to the efforts of those close to her, especially our guest today, Kai's husband, Paul Calandrino. Paul is a playwright, actor, and teacher, and comes to us from his home in Eugene, Oregon. Please join us for our conversation, which is already in progress. Paul, this must be a bittersweet moment for you. The publication of Kai's last novel, The Bells, happy and relieved to see it in print, but it might also bring back some sad memories from those last days.
Oh, well, it does. Definitely. Kai submitted the manuscript to her agent on the morning of the day that she did Death with Dignity. So she sent it off in an email to her agent, not knowing if the agent would represent it and not knowing if it would ever be published. And so it's been rewarding working on the book and getting it published, having to do all the things that Kai didn't have time to do, like make a dedication, include some epigraphs, include acknowledgments. So I had to do that all on Kai's behalf. And it's been wonderful. It's been like spending time with Kai on a project together.
I know before my last interview with her, which was a few weeks before her passing, I read part 1 of The mm-hmm. Bells. It had a different title at the time called Duel, Duel. So right. So the title was changed after she passed. Did the agent see that and kind of encourage her? Yeah, this is something that I'd like to see in print.
I don't know how much of the manuscript, if any, Kai showed to her agent before she submitted the full manuscript. I don't think she was really in the habit of doing that. I think her agent actually was always wanting to see the completed manuscript and not that interested in knowing much about the story until she read the entire thing. So, yeah, no, she, when I submitted the manuscript to the agent, there was some discussion about the title, and we thought that it was kind of abstruse.
I thought the same.
And so we searched around for a title, and bells have such a symbolic meaning in the story.
Oh, well, we'll talk about that. I've got some quotes that are just perfect. Kind of explain a little bit why it's such an apt title. Yeah. Now, Kai was suffering from bulbar onset ALS, which takes away the body's ability to function, and she had lost her ability to speak a year or so before. I interviewed her about 10 days, again, before she died through Zoom, and she was typing on a text-to-voice device. At that point, she was only able to use one finger on one hand. How did she manage to write the book under those circumstances? And I've read it, and I love it. It's just incredible.
I know, it is incredible. And to think that she didn't start writing that story until the disease had progressed to the point of taking her voice away. And at that time, she had the idea for the story, and she was able to write longhand, as she did all of her All of her writing was done in longhand. And then when she got a stack of papers, handwritten papers, she would then type them into the computer and revise as she was typing. So when she finished with the manuscript of The Bells, she was barely able to manage a pen and write on paper, and she wasn't able to type at all except to Hunt and Peck. And that would have taken ages for her to complete
Oh, yes.
typing the manuscript. So, unlike any time in the past, she consented to me typing up her manuscript. She wouldn't have that editing filter working for her, but at least it would be tight.
So that was quite a concession she made then.
It
Certainly different
was.
than her usual pattern of finishing a novel.
Yes, and as I was typing, her handwriting was very fine, very small, and not the clearest of handwriting. So I often would go to her and ask her what a word was, and she'd look at it and go, "I don't know."
So she just came up with something on the
On the
spot.
spot, yeah.
So that was a collaborative effort then. I wonder if you were kind of prompting her at times. Well, it looks like
Yeah. I mean, we always did collaborate on her work anyway. So that it was just another level.
you must have been kind of a first reader for a lot of her work.
I was always her first reader.
And you're a playwright, so it's not like some guy off the street, you know?
Right. And well, we met at the Squaw Valley Community of Writers Summer Conference. It was then called Squaw Valley. It's now just the Community of Writers, and in 1993, and we were both writing fiction at the time. But then I started reading what she was writing, and then I got disabused of my ability to write fiction in the presence of the work that she was producing. So then I switched to playwriting, which had always been theater. It always been a it was the first love of mine.
So, she completed the manuscript again on the very day that she took her life through Death with Dignity, and you and submitted it to the agent. You and the agent had a completed manuscript to work with. Yeah, and then it eventually sold to Redhead Press, who have published several of her other works. What was the process like finding a publisher and getting the manuscript ready? Redhead Press must have been ready for it and very welcoming.
They were very welcoming, and Deborah Kai's agent was welcoming. What I did when I sent it to Deborah was I had written up all of the comments that I would have made to Kai, being her first reader. So I had 3 or 4 pages of commentary, and I sent it to Deborah with the manuscript, and I said, "This is what I would have told Kai. These would be my responses to Kai." And then Kai would then, pick and choose what resonated with her and edit the manuscript as she saw fit. Well, we didn't have Kai around to do that. So I submitted those comments to Deborah and we talked about them. And then I was responsible for making some final edits. As a matter of fact, I was not that pleased, or I saw room for some adjustments in the second half of the book, which you hadn't read before it was published. And so I had kind of extensive editing suggestions, as well as the suggestion to add a very brief extra chapter.
Ah, and who wrote that extra chapter? Did you write that?
I was going to, but then as when I got the green light from Deborah to go ahead and make the edits, I read through the book again a couple of more times. And then this is something we do in theater all the time. As a playwright, you read your play aloud to yourself. So I read the entire novel aloud to myself. And when I got to the section where I thought it needed an extra chapter, I realized, no, it doesn't need
Ah,
that chapter.
and you had to read it aloud to come to that realization.
Yeah, it helped. So then I was off the hook. I didn't have to
Yeah.
try and rise to Kai's level.
So other than the usual copy edits and all that, and maybe some developmental editing, it's all Kai's words.
It's all Kai's words, yeah. And then Deborah was very happy with the proofing and editing, and she said, "Yeah, I'll send it out." And the first place she sent it was Red Hen, because Kai had a long-standing relationship with the press, and they said, "Yes, we'd love to publish this."
Now, the book The Bells tells the story of a former monk, Neil O'Malley. Very Irish name. And
Yeah.
it's spelled the same way my brother-in-law spells his name, Neil. He was born in Dublin.
Oh, and I've been pronouncing it Nile. I think it can be pronounced both ways.
We make fun of him, calling him Niall, but he pronounces it Neil at least.
Yeah.
So he's now teaching high school on the New Jersey shore. And I found it a very spiritual book, inspired by the work of Thomas Merton, whose name checked several times in the book. He must have been a favorite of Kai's.
Apparently he was, yes.
And he was a monk, and then a writer of a lot of work, a very spiritual work, but based in the Catholicism, his religion, his faith.
That's right. And I think Kai became more interested in Catholicism and the life of a monk in a monastery when we went to a wedding of her niece in Denver, and the groom's brother happened to be a Catholic priest. And Kai was just fascinated with him and wanted to know all about him, and then had the idea to write about a monk, and in this case, a former monk. And I'm sure that she, as she did with any new project she took on, did massive amounts of research.
Oh, it
And I think,
shows.
and she landed on Merton. I don't know how much she had read of his work before writing the novel, but she really dove in and really pulled out some wonderful passages from his poetry and essays. And I think it helped to really develop the inner life of Niall Neal.
Do you remember what fascinated her the most about the groom's brother, the Catholic priest?
Well, you know, she, unlike me, did not grow up Catholic. And so I don't think she understood that priests go about their daily lives like anybody else and have friends and family. And so I think it was just a novelty to her to think about that. I mean, I grew up, priests coming over for dinner. It was no big deal, but and we saw them as real people, but rather than as religious, icons. But so I think this was a new thing for her, a new concept, and so she dove into it.
That must have been funny just to watch her talk to the poor priest at the wedding. He was trying to enjoy the day, and here he's getting the Kai's research treatment here.
Yeah, we met him at a party, the rehearsal party, I think the night before, and he was very amenable to her inquiries, and they got along well together. So,
Now, her novels often integrate current events in the story. In the novel Unleashed, there's the wildfires, Weather Woman and Sinking Islands, which are related. It's about climate catastrophes. In the new book, there's a subplot on white supremacy, especially among young white men, shades of Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys. So Kai was very aware of what was happening around her, and that must have been a concern, as it is for a lot of us.
Yes, it was. And in fact, I think it was the motivation for the story itself, the idea that she had. As her final books were being published, she had this idea in her mind. She had an obsession with the idea of evil and what evil is and how it manifests in the world and how could you tell a story about evil. And so it was probably spurred on by the white supremacy and the racism and the administration and the cultural shift toward fascism and all of that were occupying much of her thinking. And so yeah, it was she did a bunch of research into white nationalism, Christian nationalism, all that stuff. And I think it resulted in some of the situational things in the novel. And I think eventually the novel became less about evil, but that was definitely in the background, a theme, a strong, very strong theme.
On the subject of evil itself, in addition to the white supremacy, Kai captures this moment in the country. Well, certainly the moment before death, and it really hasn't gotten any better. It's gotten worse. Kind of a hate and selfishness exhibited by the current president and his followers. At one point, the protagonist, should I call him Niall?
You can call him Neil.
Okay. Neil says, everyone is on a vengeful tear. So clearly, this thought about evil, it's not necessarily we're all evil, but maybe we all have a little bit in us.
Well, I think certainly Neil does have that simmering anger inside of him that he feels unprepared to deal with or incapable of dealing with. And this is a great source of anguish for him. And he know there are scenes in the novel where we flash back to his early years as a child and him having tantrums and wrecking his brother's toys and things like that. So yeah, I don't know where Kai came up with these things because she didn't seem to me like she had bubbling, simmering anger in her character, but she really captured it in the Neil character.
Now, we talked about the influence of Thomas Merton on Kai in the book, even the title. One of the book's two epigraphs, and you mentioned you added those epigraphs later, is from Merton. Bells are meant to remind us that God alone is good, that we belong to him, that we are not living for this world. They break in upon our cares in order to remind us that all things pass away and that our preoccupations are not important. Now, I thought Kai had picked that, but you picked that, Paul, because I figured that must have really resonated with her, especially as she faced her own mortality.
Well, I ha might have been channeled by Kai to pick
Yes.
that passage because it is so perfect. I forget where I must say in the epigraph where it came from, but yeah, I just started reading through Merton looking for an appropriate epigraph, and that just seemed like it said it all. And I mean, that is what Kai was going through as she was writing the novel, is that very thing.
Is that where the title came from? That particular quote where he mentions the bells and pretty much explains the connection of Merton to the book.
No, I found it afterwards. The title came from the later chapters of the book where Neil has returned to the monastery to set the record straight, to resolve unresolved issues. And there's a section where Neil is somewhat delirious, and the monastery bells are ringing, and he remembers the poem by Edgar Allan Poe of the same title.
Right. The bells, the bells,
The bells, 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 bells.
the
Yeah. And then the symbolism of bells, both in the monastic setting and also in the school setting, really seemed appropriate to me to use as the title. And all of the symbolism that bells have, for whom the bell tolls, it just seemed to me clearly an appropriate symbol.
Oh, mine is perfect. Now, some of those unresolved issues that you mentioned, returning to the monastery, it's basically to confront a monk who abused him there, Brother Thomas. And Neil learns that Thomas is dying from ALS. One of the newest monks tells Neil, God, it's my personal nightmare getting weaker and weaker, finally not being able to walk or talk or eat, your brain locked in, no cure, no real treatments. That's what Thomas told me. I mean, really, isn't that the worst way to go, which seems to be coming direct from Kai writing about her own experience with ALS in the guise of this character, Thomas.
Exactly right. It's exactly how Kai felt. I know, because I talk to her about it all the time.
And another passage, after learning about Thomas, Neil can't sleep at night. He's, quote, from the book, thinking of Thomas dying of ALS, becoming an inert piece of flesh, housing a still active consciousness, which was also true of Kai. I interviewed her twice in those last months when she lost her voice using the text-to-speech device, but her intelligence and wisdom was undiminished.
That's right. That's right. There was an article that was published about Kai in the LA Times, I think, and the title of it was Grueling Woman with Inner Life.
Did she see that?
Yes.
Did she get a kick out of it?
She did.
Truly with inner life. I don't know what I think about that myself. And Kai must have had a laugh, though.
Oh, she did. But you know, she talked about her condition a lot in her blog posts. And
yes, I've read them all.
Yeah. And so she was acutely aware of how people saw her external facade, and what a dichotomy there was with her inner life. And she was still the same person. She always had been, still an active mind, creating her works. But on the outside, she looked like, you know, like an invalid.
And of course, she couldn't talk. So that immediately people have their impressions and their prejudice about that. Now, another part of Brother Thomas's experience, his character, Brother Thomas at the monastery, the one with the ALS, that mirrors Kai's. He tells Neil that his therapist, Brother Thomas's therapist, recommended a guided trip on psilocybin. And Thomas says, "You might not believe it, but it changed the way I see the world. It really did." And I know from her blog posts, too, Kai took two guided trips, I think, in those last 6 months, and also saw it as very beneficial.
She did, especially the second time. She had read about people, you know, going, taking these psilocybin journeys. She'd read the Michael Pollan book about hallucinogenics. And one idea that struck her that she was interested in achieving was ego detachment, how we're attached to the world naturally. We're here, we're in corporeal bodies. And so one of the things that was tugging at her as she was dying was this attachment, you know, not being able to detach from the things that she loved, the people that she loved, the activities and projects that she loved. And so she had hoped that she would be able to achieve this ego detachment. It didn't really happen in the first journey she went on. And in the second journey, she reported that it absolutely did, that she felt free from her attachment to the world and her life here in it.
Yeah, there's one quote from the blog. "When the mushrooms took hold, I imagined shedding my body, wriggling out of it like a worm offloading a thick skin, then hovering above as I watched myself being carried away."
Yeah. Sounds pretty nice.
Yeah, and I know people who have lost loved ones, they report that they often see, I don't know, a spirit or something their loved one has left the body and ascended or whatever they do. Maybe they do ascend because she was watching from hovering above. So there seems to be a lot of, I don't know about truth, but certainly reports about that. And again, I don't know what to think about something like that. I imagine there's a certain reality to it, that it's not everybody's wild imagination.
Right. Well, yes, until you experience it yourself, you can only go by what people tell you. It's kind of like Bigfoot, you know, people who see Bigfoot. Yeah. believe they saw a Bigfoot, but you don't know. You don't know until you see one.
Right. Now she wrote about her intentions for one of the psilocybin trips, maybe the second one. I want the release of death in each morning and night as Paul and I look into each other's eyes. It is with acknowledgement that the end is near. And Paul, I wonder if that realization, that acknowledgement, might have been easier for Kai to accept than you.
It was. I'm thinking it was, yes. I, as Kai's primary caregiver during her illness, I was not really able to dwell on my own feelings. But one of the feelings that I had strongly was this anguish about losing her, about not having that part of my life, that huge part of my life, like half of my life, at least. Maybe I was a little codependent, I don't know. Yeah, no, it was torture. It was torture, thinking that this was all doomed and there was no way out of it. Yeah.
Now, after Neil leaves the monastery and returns home, he gets an email from the abbot that Brother Thomas has passed away, and he took his own life in the book, which seems like Kai coming to terms with her decision to end her own life as she did through Death with Dignity. There's just a lot of parallels between her and Brother Thomas.
Yes, she was absolutely reporting on the thoughts and feelings and really the experiences that she was having through the story. As writers, we're always looking for things that stories we can steal, experiences we've had to flesh out our writing. And so Guy was not shy about including this experience in her writing.
Which must have been somewhat therapeutic in a
Yeah,
way, for her, as she was going through it, her character was, and she was able to see it, I guess, kind of hovering above, as the creator of the character.
Yeah, I think possibly therapeutic, although the writing about her experience in the blog was kind of the same thing, just
Yes.
directly reporting what was happening to her. So I think it must have been, I think she wanted to report to people what it was like to be in her situation and what it was like to make the decision to end her life. And fiction is a wonderful place to have done that.
And earlier we mentioned she had the finished manuscript, but you added the dedication, the epigraphs. And The Bells is dedicated to her friend Miriam Gershow,
Yeah.
and fellow author. Miriam has a few books of her own. What was Miriam's role in getting the book published?
Miriam had a not much of an influence on the publication, but she did have a huge influence on the shaping of the novel before it got to its final form. I think, like you, Miriam had read the first part of the book and loved it. And then,
Like me, yes. I
yeah.
was hooked. It was like a cliffhanger for me.
Yeah. And then read the second half and I wouldn't say hated it, but thought that there was some challenges ahead for Kai. So they talked a lot about it, and Miriam gave her responses. And then the next time Miriam read the second half, she loved it. If Miriam were here, she could tell me if I'm reporting that accurately. But I think that's the way it went. And so, Miriam and Deborah Gershow were the other two members of Kai's writing group. And so it was just natural for Kai to let Miriam chime in. And yeah, so she helped a lot.
And I know Miriam's told me, I've interviewed her for a few of her books, that Kai was a big influence on her work and very helpful in getting the manuscript ready.
Yeah, there was a lot of love, and the writing is different between them, but they really felt comfortable being completely honest with each other and understood what each other was trying to accomplish in their writing and in each particular story. And they really helped each other a lot over the years.
Now, Kai had a documentary made of her last 6 months in collaboration with filmmaker Sandra Lucco. It's titled Vanishing, A Love Story, and it's done. It's currently showing at film festivals around the world, and it's won a few awards already. As with The Bells, you played a big part in getting the film made.
Yes, well, I was Kai's sidekick in the film, of course.
Yes.
And then I contributed some home video that I took, over the years. Our last trip to Lopez Island, which we went to every year, video of us hiking and kayaking. And then, financially, I've helped support Sandra get the film out to festivals. And
And you've appeared at a few of the
I
festivals.
have.
I know I saw you at a screening in Portland.
Yes, yeah. So I'm very supportive of the film. I think that Kai loved making the film. She really did. It was because both she and Sandra, not only were undergrads at Yale, not at the same time, but they were also graduates of NYU Film School. So they had a lot in common. They both loved film. And when Sandra asked Kai if she would mind if she came and took some video, Kai was all on board. And when Sandra came to our house the first day, Kai handed her a shot list. This is what I think you should film.
One
And
filmmaker to another.
Sandra's intention was not originally to film a full-length documentary, but it quickly became that. And Kai, it was another one of those projects that Kai could sink her teeth into during the whole process. Not only the progression of her illness. Not only was she writing her novel, she was writing her blog posts, and she also had the film to help create. And, and then the other projects were fit wrapping up a life and her relationships with her family and friends.
Now, interesting artistic choice. Sandra uses Kai's voice to do the narration, and the voice is AI generated, which was based on my small contribution. I a recording early on with Kai for radio when she was actually in the studio with me, and that was the voice that the recording that Sandra used.
Right.
And it's just amazing likeness, as you can attest to. And Kai actually requested that during filming. What was it like to hear her again in words that she had never spoken herself?
Oh, it was wonderful. The actual quality of the voice itself is spot on. It was a Ukrainian company that did the engineering to apply to kind of create the voice digitally, and then an actor spoke the words that were going to be the voiceover, and then they apply the voice to the words that the actor has spoken. So it was wonderful hearing her voice again. And every time I see the film, I feel like I'm spending an hour and 45 minutes with Kai. I think those of us who knew her were closest to her can notice little nuances, little differences between Guy's actual voice and the AI voice, but they're minor, and overall the quality is terrific.
Now, we talked about her blog posts, and they're still up on her website for anybody who wants to read, and certainly well worth reading. For anyone interested in her work, her experience with ALS, this great mind. Do you have any plans to, Paul, maybe to collect them in a book? And I wonder if there are any more projects Kai was working on that might find their way to a wider audience at some point.
There has been some activity. I've gathered the blog posts into a book, and I have submitted that to Kai's agent, and I have received back some feedback from Deborah. And so I am in the process now of editing the blog book, as I refer to it.
Wow. Boy, I'd love to see them all collected.
But what Deborah noticed in reading all of the posts in a row was that there was some overlap, there was some repetition. And so part of what I have to do is make sure that it's not repeating too much, and that if a certain topic is raised again later in the book, that we're referring back to the earlier mention of it. And so it's a matter of refining the flow of the book. So yeah, at some point, hopefully, fingers crossed, it will be published.
Oh, well, I look forward to seeing that. Paul, thanks so much for talking with me today about Kai, of course, and then the new book, The Bells.
It's been my pleasure. I can't get enough of talking about Kai.
Well, that's all for this episode of Jonesy here on KABU Community Radio. If you missed any part of the show, would like to hear the longer version, you can stream this episode and previous episodes online at kboo.fm/program/Jonesy, Jonesy, or just search for it on the KABU website. Before we head out the door, a big thank you to our guest today, Paul Calandrino. The novel The Bells by Paul's late wife, Kai Emmons, was recently published by Red Hand Press. You can learn more about the new novel and all Kai's work, including her blog, at kaiemmonsauthor.com, and you can find out about Sandra Luco's documentary, Vanishing a Love Story, which follows Kai in the last 6 months of her life, online at vanishingalovestory.com. Jonesy, by the way, comes to you every other week on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month, usually from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Tune in for our next show on Thursday, February 12th, 2026. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying,
to the tolling of the bells, 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 to the moaning and the groaning of the bells.